Welcome back. We've got a really timely and honestly pretty intense deep dive lined up for you today.
Yeah, intense is definitely the right word for this one.
Right. I mean, if you are anywhere near the wealth management sector, you'll want to lean in. We're focusing our lens squarely on how financial advisors protect their clients' money and, well, more importantly, their data.
Because those two things are basically synonymous now, you know?
Exactly. Our primary source material today is this newly published guide from March 2026. It's put together by the team at Technigian, and it's called the FINRA Compliance IT Checklist for Newport Beach Financial Advisors, 2026 edition.
And I know that's a very geographically specific title, centering on that high net worth Pacific Coast Highway corridor in Orange County, specifically around that 92660 zip code.
Right.
But make no mistake, the regulatory mandates we're diving into, they apply universally to any FANRRA registered firm across the country, whether you're in Southern California or South Dakota.
Yeah, the rules don't change based on your zip code. So the mission for our deep dive today is to explore how and why cybersecurity in the financial advisory world has fundamentally transformed. We are well past the days of treating IT as just a background support function.
Right, the folks you call when your printer jams or your email won't load.
Yeah, exactly. Today, regulators are treating your IT infrastructure as a principal operational risk. If you are managing client money in 2026, this shift dictates almost everything about how you run your firm.
It really does. And to set the stage for you, we have to look at the catalyst for this. FANRA's 2026 Annual Regulatory Oversight Report dropped a bit early, landing in December 2025.
Right.
And the general consensus across the wealth management industry is that this particular report came out with significantly sharper teeth than we've seen in previous years.
Sharper teeth, for sure.
The scrutiny from both FINRA and the SEC has reached a boiling point, particularly for firms handling high net worth portfolios. The grace period for figuring it out is officially over.
And that brings us to the ticking clock, because there is a very real, very imminent deadline looming over the industry right now. If you're at a smaller FINRA member firm, you have until June 3, 2026 to fully comply with the newly amended SEC Regulation SP.
And for the larger firms, your deadline actually passed back in December. But for those smaller boutique firms, that June date is a hard wall.
So we should probably translate what Regulation SP actually means for a firm's day-to-day, because these amendments are rigorous.
They are. The SEC is now demanding a formal written program that is specifically designed to detect, respond to, and recover from unauthorized access to sensitive customer data.
Notice the phrasing there. It doesn't just say prevent access.
Exactly. It's a regulatory acknowledgement that breaches will happen.
Yeah.
Furthermore, this update includes mandatory customer notification procedures. That's actually checklist item number two in the guide.
Right.
If a breach occurs, you must have a documented, tested workflow for exactly how and when you tell your clients their data was exposed, complete with strict timelines.
Okay, let's unpack this, because that requirement for a written program completely changes the administrative burden.
Oh, absolutely.
The days of downloading a generic boilerplate compliance template off the internet, changing the company name, and letting it gather dust in a filing cabinet, those days are done. Regulators are expecting a living document.
Yes, checklist item number one, the written cybersecurity program.
Exactly. It has to be meticulously tailored to your firm's actual operations. Think about it from a practical standpoint. A boutique, two-advisor registered investment advisor, an RIA, has a totally different risk profile compared to a massive 50-person broker-dealer.
Completely different.
Yeah.
Your policies on data classification, who gets access to what, and how you respond to an incident, they have to reflect your unique reality. And this ties directly into FINRA Rule 3110.
Which governs supervisory oversight, right?
Right. Rule 3110 dictates that a firm's activities require reasonably designed supervisory systems. FINRA has now explicitly brought all of your technology and cybersecurity measures under that umbrella.
So if a FINRA examiner walks into a firm's office tomorrow, what happens if the managing partner just says, "Hey, we're good. We have antivirus installed on all the laptops"?
The examiner's going to write them up immediately. Antivirus isn't a defense anymore, it's an assumption. They expect to see those custom-tailored policies you mentioned, but more importantly, they expect to see a paper trail proving that the firm's leadership is actively testing those procedures.
You can't just have a plan. You have to prove you practice the plan.
Precisely.
The bar has been raised so incredibly high, but to be fair, it's because the threat landscape has evolved into something straight out of a science fiction movie. The 2026 FINRA report calls out some truly terrifying modern threats.
Yeah, we aren't talking about a prince emailing you for a wire transfer anymore.
No, we're talking about Gen AI-enhanced phishing campaigns, flawless deepfake identification documents used to open fraudulent accounts, and incredibly accurate voice clones.
What's fascinating here is how this completely breaks the traditional security paradigm. Let's look at endpoint security, how you protect the actual laptops and servers.
Okay.
Traditional signature-based antivirus software relies on a known list of bad files. It's like a bouncer at a club checking faces against a printed ban list.
But AI can just generate unique, never-before-seen malware on the fly.
Exactly. So the bouncer's list is useless. That's why firms are now required to deploy EDR, endpoint detection, and response. That's checklist item number 4.
How does EDR actually differ from that traditional bouncer, just in plain English?
Instead of just checking a list at the door, EDR is like having active security guards patrolling the halls, watching how people behave. EDR monitors the system for anomalies.
So if something acts weird, it catches it.
Right. If a program suddenly tries to encrypt 1,000 client files at 3:00 a.m., EDR recognizes the suspicious behavior, automatically isolates that compromised device from the rest of the network, and alerts the security team. It requires 247 continuous monitoring to actually be effective.
So EDR locks down the inside of the building. But what about the front door? Because the primary battleground for these attacks is still the inbox.
It is. Checklist item number 5 covers email security.
And we're seeing AI-craft, hyper-personalized phishing emails that are practically indistinguishable from real communications. They'll reference specific client names, accurate account balances, and even mimic a firm's internal corporate jargon.
Defending the inbox today requires fighting fire with fire. You need AI-powered email filtering to catch those subtle anomalies. But more crucially, firms have to implement strict email authentication protocols. The big ones are DRRs, DCAM, and SPF.
I know that's a lot of acronym soup for our listeners who aren't IT professionals. Can we break those down?
Sure. Think of DRRs, DCAM, and SPF as a digital wax seal on your firm's correspondence. When you send an email, these protocols use cryptographic signatures to mathematically prove to the receiving server, like Gmail or Outlook, that the message actually originated from your firm's authorized servers.
And not from a hacker in another country spoofing your advisor's email address.
Exactly. Without these protocols properly configured, attackers can easily impersonate your team to your clients.
That ability to impersonate leads us right into the horrifying reality of voice cloning. If an attacker can spoof your email and clone a client's voice using a 3-second clip they pulled from social media, how does an advisor ever know who they're actually talking to?
That is the exact problem SEC Regulation SID addresses. It governs identity theft red flag programs. Verifying a client's identity is harder than ever. Regulation SID requires firms to implement specific, documented programs to detect operational red flags. This is checklist item number 10.
Give me an example of a red flag that an advisor's system needs to catch.
Let's say a client's profile shows a sudden change of address. 10 minutes later, a request comes in for a massive wire transfer to a new external account. That sequence is a massive red flag.
Yeah, that's highly suspicious.
Your systems need to catch that instantly, and your firm must have a documented, friction-heavy response plan. Maybe that means temporarily freezing the account, or requiring the client to hop on a live video call and answer specific security questions before a single dollar is moved.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's talk about the digital paper trail, because the regulatory net has been cast incredibly wide. SEC rules 17A3 and 17A4 govern books and records compliance. That's checklist item number 9.
Right.
Now, anyone in the industry knows you have to archive your emails. That's been standard for years. But the 2026 landscape is wild.
It is entirely unforgiving. Those archiving rules now officially encompass text messages, instant messaging platforms like Microsoft Teams or Slack, and all social media communication.
Everything.
Everything. If you're using a platform to conduct firm business, every keystroke must be captured, indexed, and stored in a non-rewritable format for 3 to 6 years.
But the absolute wildest part of this regulatory update is how it handles generative AI. Let's say I'm an advisor. I use a tool like ChatGPT or Microsoft Copilot just to help me summarize a dense portfolio strategy before I send it to a client.
Huh.
The rules say it's not just the final email I send that needs to be archived.
That's right. The SEC mandates that both the specific prompts, the actual inputs the advisor typed into the AI, and the AI's generated outputs must be captured and retained as part of the firm's official books and records.
Hold on. Let me push back on that, because that sounds like a massive logistical nightmare for a small firm. You're telling me if an advisor types, make this paragraph sound a little friendlier, into a chatbot, that prompt is now a matter of federal regulatory record.
Yes.
How is a 5-person firm supposed to manage that kind of data capture without grinding their workflow to a halt?
It is a massive point of friction, and you're right, it's a huge burden. But from the regulator's perspective, they need to know exactly how investment advice is being formulated. If an AI hallucinates a piece of financial data, and the advisor passes that bad data onto the client,
then who is at fault?
Exactly. The SEC needs the entire digital paper trail to determine who is at fault. Did the advisor ask a leading question? Did they fail to verify the AI's output? The only way to audit that is to archive the entire interaction.
That really underscores how seriously the SEC is taking AI integration. But moving from the bleeding edge of AI back to the absolute non-negotiable foundations, let's talk about locking the digital doors. Compromised credentials are still a primary vector for account takeovers.
They are.
And the baseline expectation to start that is multi-factor authentication, or MFA, checklist item number 3.
And we aren't just talking about getting a text message with a 6-digit code when you log into your email. SMS-based MFA is actually quite vulnerable to SIM swapping attacks. Firms are moving toward authenticator apps or physical security keys. But the real shift is the scope. MFA has to be everywhere.
Right. It's not a best practice anymore. It's a strict mandate. You need it on all client-facing portals, your CRM platforms, your portfolio management software, all VPNs, and any remote desktop setups. If a system touches client data, it must have MFA.
Absolutely. And once you've secured the logins with MFA, you have to secure the underlying data itself. The regulatory standard for data encryption and access controls is very specific. This is checklist item number 6. Sensitive customer information. Things like social security numbers, trading histories, account balances. It must be encrypted both at rest and in transit.
Let's translate those standards. For data at rest, meaning the files sitting on your server or in your backups, the standard is AES 256 encryption. What does that actually mean for a firm?
Think of AES 256 as putting your client's data inside a titanium bank vault that would take a supercomputer millions of years to crack. Even if a hacker physically stole your server, the data is useless gibberish without the decryption key.
And for data in transit.
When you're sending that data across the internet, it must use TLS 1.2 or higher. That's the armored transport truck moving the data from the vault to the client securely.
And this encryption has to be paired with strict role-based access controls, the principle of least privilege. An administrative assistant shouldn't have access to the same raw financial data as the lead portfolio manager.
Right, and those permissions have to be documented and reviewed quarterly.
Which brings us to another critical and often stressful defense mechanism, the patching window. Checklist item number 12.
Patch management is where a lot of smaller firms fail their audits. Unpatched software remains one of the top vulnerabilities exploited by hackers. When Microsoft or Adobe releases a security update, it's essentially them announcing to the world, hey, we found a hole in our software, here's the fix. Hackers immediately start looking for firms that haven't applied the fix yet.
And FINRA's expectations here are incredibly strict. If a critical security patch is released for an internet-facing system, like your firm's web server or VPN, you must apply it within 72 hours. For internal systems, you have a 30-day window.
Yes.
Leaving a system unpatched for a week in 2026 is like leaving your firm's front door wide open with a giant neon sign pointing to the vault. Regulators are essentially demanding you install an automatic deadbolt. You need automated patching wherever possible and regular vulnerability scanning.
It's a rigorous technical standard, but we can't forget that your technology is only as strong as the people using it. FANRA consistently identifies the human element as the primary vulnerability in any cybersecurity posture. All the titanium vaults and armored transport trucks don't matter if an employee willingly hands over the keys.
Which is why annual documented security awareness training is mandatory for all staff. Checklist item number 11, from the top partners down to the newest interns. And this can't just be a boring video they click through while eating lunch.
No, it has to specifically focus on current threats. Social engineering, business email compromise, and the Gen AI voice cloning threats we discussed earlier. Crucially, this training must be completed during new hire onboarding, before an employee is ever given access to the firm's systems.
That makes total sense. You don't hand them the keys until they know how to protect them.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the human element isn't just your direct employees. You also have to worry about your partners.
Vendor risk management. Checklist item number 7. Wealth management firms don't operate in a vacuum. You rely on an entire ecosystem of third parties, custodians, clearing firms, IT providers, cloud storage vendors.
FinRI is making it crystal clear to firm owners. You can outsource the operational work, but you absolutely cannot outsource your regulatory liability. If your cloud provider gets breached and loses your client's data, the SEC is coming after you, not just the cloud provider.
So how does a wealth management firm actually perform due diligence on a massive tech vendor? They can't exactly walk into their data centers and audit their servers.
They do it by reviewing third-party audits, specifically SOC2 reports. SOC2 is essentially an independent auditor's stamp of approval that a vendor's security controls are actually functioning as promised. Firms have to maintain a documented inventory of every vendor that touches their data, and they must conduct serious initial and ongoing reviews of those SOC2 reports to ensure the vendor's posture matches the firm's own regulatory obligations.
And even if you do everything right, even if your vendors are secure, your staff is trained, and your patches are up to date, you still have to plan for the worst-case scenario. Business continuity plans fall under FIMINRA Rule 43-7. That's checklist item number 8. When a disaster strikes, how does your firm survive?
Whether it's a targeted ransomware attack that locks down your network, a regional power grid failure, or a natural disaster, your ability to execute client trades and communicate cannot just vanish. Firms must maintain immutable or air-gapped backups.
I love the term air-gapped. For you listening, imagine a submarine. An air-gapped backup is like a secure room in a submarine that has its own separate oxygen supply and watertight doors. Even if the rest of the ship floods, or in this case, if the rest of your network is infected with ransomware, that backup is physically and logically disconnected. The infection cannot reach it.
Exactly. And the immutable part means that once the backup is written, it cannot be altered or deleted by anyone, not even an administrator, for a set period of time. But again, you can't just have this plan sitting in a binder. You are required to run annual tabletop testing. You have to sit your team down and run a full recovery simulation.
Like a fire drill.
Right. Okay, we just got hit with a ransomware. The servers are locked. What is our exact step-by-step process? And you have to document the results of that simulation for the regulators.
So we've covered a massive amount of ground here. Let's talk about the consequences. What actually happens when a firm fails to implement all of this?
The fallout is severe, and it compounds quickly. If you fail a routine FinRA cybersecurity examination, the regulatory actions escalate from cautionary letters to formal disciplinary proceedings. You face massive financial fines. You could be subjected to grueling, enhanced supervision requirements, where regulators are constantly looking over your shoulder, which drains your firm's time and resources.
But an exam failure is honestly a walk in the park compared to an actual data breach at a non-compliant firm. If your client's financial data is stolen by hackers and it comes to light that you lacked the mandated MFA or encryption controls, you are facing a nightmare scenario.
A total nightmare.
You've got simultaneous regulatory investigations from the SEC and FinRA, massive legal liability from class action client lawsuits, and the total, potentially unrecoverable collapse of your firm's reputation.
Right. And that is exactly why the source material from Technigian frames their services the way they do for these Orange County advisory firms.
Yeah.
They're essentially selling a shield against that exact nightmare scenario.
Let's talk about the price tag on that shield. According to the guide, for a small advisory firm, say 5 to 20 employees, the cost for compliance-ready IT is roughly $2,000 to $5,000 a month. For that price, Technigian provides a 247 security operations center with AI threat detection, full compliance gap assessments, continuous maintenance of all that examination-ready documentation we talked about, and complete implementation of those looming RAGE-SP requirements before the June deadline.
It sounds like a significant line item for a boutique firm. But when you weigh that $2,000 to $5,000 monthly cost against the alternatives, the perspective changes. That is a mere fraction of what a single FinRA regulatory fine would cost. It doesn't even begin to touch the hourly legal fees you'd incur during a client lawsuit, or the devastating loss of assets under management following a public breach. At this stage, it's not really an IT cost. It's an investment in the basic survivability of the firm.
So, what does this all mean? If you take away just one thing from this deep dive, let it be this. For financial advisors operating in 2026, having airtight, rigorously documented cybersecurity is no longer just an annoying IT hurdle. It is the fundamental cost of doing business. It's the absolute minimum requirement for holding on to your client's trust in an era where AI-driven fraud is becoming indistinguishable from reality. The bottom line is simple. You cannot protect your client's wealth if you cannot protect their data.
This raises an important question, one that really stretches beyond just the regulatory mandates we've explored today. As generative AI continues to evolve at a breakneck pace, as it perfectly mimics human voices, as it learns to forge absolutely flawless, mathematically undetectable identification documents in real time, will we soon reach a tipping point?
What do you mean?
Are we approaching a moment where our financial systems must abandon the convenience of digital verification altogether? We might soon find ourselves in a reality where the only way to establish true trust is to revert entirely to in-person physical verifications for all major financial transactions.
That is a fascinating and honestly a slightly chilling thought to leave on. The idea of having to drive to a bank branch just to verify a wire transfer because we can't trust our own screens anymore. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this breakdown has given you a clearer understanding of the massive shifts happening in wealth management, compliance, and cybersecurity. Keep questioning the world around you, stay secure out there, and we will catch you on the next one.